This is Mae Brussel. It's broadcast number 680. It's side two of 680, December the 17th, 1984. The weeks go so quickly, I didn't even take time to say happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, because people get these tapes later and a different time period. The holidays have come and gone. And, of course, soon we have the New Year's. So by the time this gets to you, it'll just be about New Year's Eve. So, of course, I wish you a very healthy and happy New Year, and thank you for all of the things that many of you have done. I'm sorry there's so many of you now. It makes it more complicated, but I do appreciate the contact. I can't reciprocate by answering everything, but I appreciate the contacts and the information, and I hope you have a good year, and I hope the new project that I take on will be successful and that too many people won't be unhappy by whatever decision I make. Now, continuing with this article in the San Francisco Chronicle on the Nazis and the dangerous group called The Chilling Look Inside the Neo-Nazi Fortress, these people have strong links. As I say, Mr. Butler was the director, national director of the Christian Defense League, and you can take what I've written and what I've said on the air and go from there on the many broadcasts of the seriousness of it. Now, 4 years ago, Mr. Keith Gilbert split with Richard Butler. We shared that information. Gilbert works with San Quentin convicts and with various Aryan brotherhoods that came out of the prison system. He's 15 miles from Gilbert and Butler, 15 miles from each other, and their churches have the same idea. White racists, do away with the Jews, do away with the blacks, do away with the liberals. And let's get the dynamite going. And the Aryan soldiers there work with stacks of dynamite. They shoot cannons. Large artillery pieces are heard by neighbors around. And Mr. Gilbert boasts that he has stockpiles of weapons, that they are held by white supremacists, and they even have World War II tanks. Now, Mr. Gilbert has put in a computer center to reach Nazis around the country, but they have international Nazi meetings every year. So it goes beyond, the computer may be national, but the membership is international, and now they're linked by computers. So if they don't like a certain radio program, or they don't like a certain person or a certain writer or a certain Jew, they can wipe them out, get rid of them. And I believe that they've been doing this for a long time, and I often refer to the death squads in the United States, but now they're getting more organized. And this article says the aim of the Nazis in particular, that they talk about every year at their international meeting, is to have unlimited arms supplies, to join themselves by computers, to seize control of large chunks of Idaho, Washington, Montana, and Canada, to purify the nation of racial filth, and if the government forces to try and retake the area, they will have an impossible task. Now, having the botulism or the tetanus and this kind of bacterial warfare that they may be very well sprouting and pulling as their trump card, it would be very difficult without a lot of pain to this country to know how far they go or if they're going to erupt in other cities simultaneously, because I believe, with being very modest, that they have hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't think that 3.5 million up at Eureka, that bank robbery, was anything. I mean, it makes it look like they need money. There was a receipt here for one of the fellows that just bought a $12,000 car. With money coming in from South America and Argentina and from around the world, from Taiwan and the Philippines and so forth, there has been an intent to take this country in a better way than their suicidal idea to attack the Pentagon with suicide teams and the government. By attacking the Pentagon, you slow up the military so they can't respond to what you're doing and you have chaos. Now, they have a book that is their guideline. I'll have to get a copy of it. I just read about it this week, called Turner's Diaries by William Pierce. And this reminds me of the book The Black Abductor, with the exact story of the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, the Donald DeFries, the publisher's daughter. It was down to a finite point. What was going to happen to Patty Hearst 2 years later by a person we've never heard of? The name was printed by a printer we've never heard of that obviously was a CIA front for getting out a script so those who read it would know the goals and techniques. And so the Turner's Diary seems to be the book for them. So at their national, international meeting, somebody has put this out to understand what they're going to do. They're going to start a white guerrilla group to launch a terrorist revolution. It's going to end up in Israel. They're going to destroy Israel with atomic bombs, and one of the heroes will die in a suicide attack against the Pentagon. Now, this mentality feeds with the idea of the Armageddon in Israel. Only these fellows link up to those people who are planning an Armageddon. Remember what we shared last week and the week before, the P2 Lodge, the Masonic Lodge, formed by the OSS and the CIA, and I have to go into more of that detail for you, more information on how we put Mr. Licio Gelli back in business in an organization that Mussolini blacklisted because he said it was a government inside of a government. And when the Allies take Italy, they reconstruct and join these two lodges for Licio Gelli and Mr. Borghese and the Black Princes of Murder and Assassination and Terror and International Death Squad. It took our own intelligence community to put together for those fascist Nazis what Mussolini wouldn't allow and didn't trust. And is that what we fought the war? We, in quotes, won the war to put into a power, a secret organization that was outlawed under Mussolini. Maybe that's why they wanted Mussolini dead and hung up by the heels with his mistress, because they took over his networks and could do more without him. Maybe they thought Mussolini was too nice. But the textbook is Turner's Diaries. And after Mr. Matthews was killed and Mr. Yarbrough was shot, there's a shootout. They went into the home of Mr. Yarbrough and found the gun that is linked to the shooting of the radio announcer in Denver, Colorado. Now, the article in the Chronicle says a few months ago, the fiery rhetoric like this would be disregarded. Why would it be disregarded? I have to write to the person who wrote this in the Chronicle. A few months ago, they disregarded this. I've been talking about this on the air for many, many years. It's like Edgar Hoover saying in 1968 to 1970, there was no organized crime in this country. He was sitting down and munching with Mo Dallas and Lucky Luciano or Meyer Lansky and the Joe Bananas and using them as agents and saying there's no organized crime. Well, the same way these people say a few months ago it would be disregarded. They say now the FBI has linked Matthews and seven others to three robberies that netted about $4 million. And there's a list of their various feats and the places they broke into the banks and the death threats to the driver of the Brinks truck. And Matthews, of course, the one who's now dead, left a letter when he died saying that his group, the order that he organized, would continue, that there's enemies in these countries such as the liberals and so forth. And he left sort of a last letter in case he was killed, I guess, on his intents on taking over the country. Matthews' group, taken again out of the Turner's Diaries by William Pierce, it's not the new order, the order that ties into the other fellows, but he had his own special little meaner group, as you would say, and he was to fund this with crimes, robbery, counterfeiting. Counterfeiting would be a source of money to continue the operations, and also was a purpose to undermine the U.S. economy. And they called these neo-Nazis, but that was the goal of Adolf Hitler. During the war and after the war, whether you believe he's alive or dead, and I happen to believe he probably lived, and Martin Bormann, the whole gang, it was to take America by counterfeiting in Great Britain and the economy in Europe, taking America in these countries and putting out phony money and getting the books off balance in that way, but using some of the money and then confusing the other money. And the order would buy guns and have terrorist attacks, and their goal was assassinations. And the enemies are the Jews, the minorities, the political liberals, and destroy the Jewish press once and for all. They call the major news media the Jewish news media. And in all fairness, I think the press deserves to be destroyed. I can't do it, but it is not a accurate press. I shouldn't even agree with them on any point. But in a way, the news media deserves some of the anger that is directed towards them. And eventually, people like Reverend Moon, who forms his own press combine, and Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson and all the Christian network will have their own reporters, their own newscasts. So when they wipe out the others, you'll get Christian broadcasting from coast to coast that will replace what they think is liberal and I think is a bunch of mush that if it were wiped out tomorrow and you just read books, you'd be better off. The Monterey Herald has another small story on the neo-Nazis tied up north. I don't know how much your local papers are getting it. They describe them as a small group bent on a revolution, a violent revolution. A small group. You know, they meet nationally, internationally, have links to all the intelligence outlets. And this article describes their crimes across the West and their murder of the Jewish talk show, the host in Denver. But the counterfeiting, the illegal weapons, and so forth. And seven people were arrested at the house where Mr. Matthews died, several houses away. And there's a list of some of the weapons they had in the house. In addition, there's much, much more up at the location where the original priest, the Lockheed priest, and the Aryan Brotherhood priest have their churches. But in the area where Mr. Yarborough was arrested, the cohort with Matthews, in one home they found automatic weapons, explosives, $73,000 in cash, receipt for $11,000 automobile that had just been paid, 6,000 rounds of ammunition, 1,000 sticks of dynamite, plastic explosives, hand grenades, semi-automatic rifles, infrared vision telescopes, slings loaded with .308 caliber military ammunition, heavy assault rifles. They had four loaded crossbows, 1.5 pounds of high-power explosive, 110 blasting caps, gun silencers, guns, lots of them, police scanners, booby traps. That's just a little bit from one home, the home of Mr. Yarborough, who's now in custody, who was arrested. But they've been stockpiling for 12 years. That's all he had with him at that time. So I can't even visualize what they really have because, as I say, George Shultz, she wants a preemptive strike. Let him go up there. That's the best place. Schultze, go on up there. Forget Lebanon and Kuwait and Iran. Go on up and take them. The excuse of the preemptive strike against terrorism is to save something or lives will happen in the future. Now, save those bridges. What's a Bixby Creek down here? The bridge to Big Sur. You cut off the whole Highway 1 right in the middle. Important bridges around the country. Utilities cut off. Go on in, Schultz, and attack our domestic terrorists. Never did you have a better chance, and I hope some of you write to him about it. Now, getting on to another book and matters which are important to that and not separate from it, but into the Lissio Gelli, the OSS, the assassination teams along the lines that I've been doing the last 2 weeks. A subscriber to the tapes, several of them, sent me just a few pages from a new book out called The Year of Armageddon by Gordon Thomas and Max Morgan. It just came out few months ago from London, Grenada Publishers. I'm sure that Tom Davis Research will have it soon, and you can write and get it from him. I'm going to quote from the book and then intersperse certain ideas that are pertinent because this is a very important section on the use of the Knights of Malta and the Opus Dei for spying, the Vatican network of spies, and the use of them for political purposes and how the use was put together by Wild Bill Donovan, who's so important to Permandex, to the assassination teams, because particularly I'm interested in the murder of John Kennedy and the effects it had on the country later and the links of these people grounded into that particular event. This book goes, I'll give you the quotes, and then when I get off the track, I'll explain when and get back to direct quotes. It says, the American agency, the CIA, of course, is not the only one to work inside the Vatican. The Soviets, the British, the French have moles in the walls. The BND, the Galen Group, the Mossad in Israel have at least one pipeline into the Secretariat of State. For centuries, the Vatican was the prime target of secular intelligence. Today is one of the world's richest repositories of genuine secrets, acting as a magnet for spies. There is a network in the Vatican and outside of it of over 100 nuncios, pronuncios, and apostolic delegates who send into the Secretariat of State, into the Vatican, news of a spying nature. Now, when John, just getting off from that direct quote of a possible spy within the Vatican, when John DeLorean was first arrested and taken by surprise, there was an article in the newspaper that he attended St. Patrick's every day in New York, And he was with Cardinal Cook, and Cook died shortly after the DeLorean arrest of a very quick cancer that he was supposed to have had for a long period of years and was functioning perfectly well until that time. Now, a subscriber of the tape sent me an article from Contemporary Christian Magazine, October 1984, about DeLorean. It said, for 8 or 10 years prior to his arrest, he went to the church every single morning of his life, usually St. Patrick's if I was in New York or St. James if I was in London, every morning, 7 to 7:15. The minute he was arrested, he disassociated himself. He carried a Bible. I never saw a picture of a priest with him. He became more like a fundamentalist Christian. His background were parents from Alsace and from Vienna. He worked for General Motors. His dad, I believe, worked for Ford, both big suppliers and funders of equipment for Adolf Hitler during the entire war. DeLorean had this mysterious auto plant in Ireland, immense millions of dollars of subsidies from the British government, a company based in Panama with unaccounted millions and millions in Switzerland. And he is a perfect kind of a carrier, could be, but not necessarily, frequently every day, civilians going in and out of the Vatican because of his huge corporate connections and multinational corporation connections, and the possibility that William Hetrick was, in fact, obtaining and dealing with Klaus Barbie down in South America. And Klaus Barbie got his ticket to South America by the Knights of Malta and the Vatican when he left Europe to set up headquarters in South America. The book goes on. It is the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, that dominates the intelligence knowledge inside the Vatican. From that day, almost 40 years ago, this would be 1944, when one of the founder members of the CIA, General William Wild Bill Donovan, received an audience by Pope Pius XII and decorated with the Grand Cross of the Order of St. Sylvester, the oldest and most prestigious of papal knighthoods, an award given to only 100 other men in history, who by feats of arms, by arms or writing or outstanding deeds, have spread the faith of Catholicism and have safeguarded and championed their church, Catholicism. From the day Donovan bowed his head before Pius XII, the CIA remained ensconced virtually without interruption as the prime intelligence advisor to successive pontiffs. And the footnote they have here is Martin Lee, a respected American writer specializing in CIA matters, who told us in Rome in October 83 that Donovan received his knighthood for assisting the church during World War II in his capacity as chief officer of the OSS. Was Donovan helping America or the church, the OSS, and working with the Vatican? And they described it as the forerunner, he describes it, of the CIA. Donovan's close ties with the Vatican gave him an invaluable insight into secret affairs of the Vatican, then supposedly a neutral enclave in the midst of fascist Rome. And they give a credit for Mother Jones' article of July of 83. Now, going back to the Rebel article on the Nazis and the JFK assassination and the roots of the Nazis in the intelligence system, that I wrote for Rebel in 1983 in November. I have a section on Wild Bill Donovan of the OSS and Alan Dulles and the Vatican. This is not new for you now, but it comes out in this new book, The Armageddon, The Year of Armageddon, and I want to repeat this to you because I think there are a lot of people that have the article that haven't read it, and maybe we should have a storybook hour and I read it to you out loud. But in the section on Donovan, I tell about his pudding. He was in charge of Alan Dulles' offices in Bern, Switzerland from 1940 on, how Dulles was working with SS Commander Karl Wolff, who simultaneously was running Treblinka concentration camp and cooking off 300,000 Jews while he's sitting with Dulles and Donovan, and Donovan is to be knighted for working with SS Karl Wolff, who appears again still alive at that time on a yacht that belonged to Mr. Goering. And Wolf is making deals with the OSS, with William Donovan, and the sovereign state in the Vatican. Wild Bill Donovan was top dog of the OSS. And I wrote shortly before the Germans overran Europe, and this is the favor Donovan did that got him the knighthood. He put Father Felix Morleon, a papal functionary, who set up a Pro Deo, that organization with God, in Lisbon. He moved him to New York City on 60th Street at the apartment address of William Taub, a front during the war, the American Council for International Promotion of Democracy. Taub wrote a book about the relationship he had with Cardinal Alfredo Ottaviania, O-T-T-A-V-I-A-N-I-A, of the Holy See, and Taub's friend, this cardinal, arranged in 1929 that Vatican would remain neutral, that Mussolini would give them $89 million in 1929 to stay neutral as Franco emerged and Hitler emerged and Mussolini emerged. So this book, the article by Martin Lee, says that they did favors. He gave an invaluable insight into the Vatican, and they worked in the enclave. They did a lot more, and this is terribly important, that donation of $89 million. Now, the person closest to that was William Taub, and then that money went into the hands, as I wrote, of Michael Sindona, and they began mingling it with the GOP, with Richard Nixon, and Licio Gelli, with Ronald Reagan, and other top officials. And then it turns out that our CIA is getting together the P2 Masonic Lodge to overthrow Italy and the United States, involved with the Kennedy assassination. The main people in that had a link to the murder of our president of the United States. And as I wrote, this is a year ago, when Rome was liberated in 1944, Morleon and Pro Deo relocated there the organization, and in recognition of Donovan's good work on behalf of Pro Deo, the Pope knighted him with the Grand Cross of the Order of St. Sylvester, where he flew off to Washington to cut his deal with the CIA. Reinhard Galen got his knighthood, the Military Order of Malta, from the Pontiff, and so did James Jesus Angleton, a Donovan operative in Rome, who became the CIA's chief of counterintelligence. This is very important because of the role that they play later with Mr. Donovan, but the Knights of Malta is expressed in this book as being terribly important to repressive governments and used as a spy agency at the same time. Incidentally, just not to get too far off the subject, but this same Taub that housed Morleon in Washington, D.C., and it was a close friend of Ottaviani's in Italy, was left at the time of Watergate in the Swiss Alps for dead. I mentioned that on broadcast, and that a man named Ernest Kaiser had hired killers to kill Taub, but he miraculously survived, and I'd written an article believing that he was among those 30 top Watergate people that was killed at the time of Watergate, but that was with a question mark of Kaiser. And he surfaced later, and Taub had blamed Kaiser, and Kaiser was apprehended for the murder attempt of Taub. Kaiser's name surfaced one more time in the book on Edwin Wilson. He's the man who accompanied Edwin Wilson home through the Dominican Republic to New York City, where Wilson was arrested in June of 82. Kaiser accompanied him there. Recently, Kaiser's name surfaced one more time as a CIA operative. He's involved with a banking scandal that was being investigated in Florida that links to the chief investigator, Mr. Williams, of the Air Florida flight that I said was sabotage. I'll give you the dates and the information. Kaiser's name appears in the Swiss Alps trying to kill Taub with those close links to the Vatican, with his bringing in Edwin Wilson, who has direct links through Nugenhan and through the Masonic Lodge and the P2 to the new Rossano Brasi evidence that I'm going to go into. Kaiser's name surfaces with the Air Florida scandal, the banking scandal in Florida. And just last week, Ernest Kaiser, was shot in Maryland near Washington with a satchel full of documents on Robert Vesco. He wasn't killed. He was shot in the arm, and somebody took the documents, his involvement of the Vesco affair. So that Taub was important, Kaiser's important, and the Vatican is the common denominator, the Vatican arms, the drug smuggling, the P2, the CIA and the OSS all come together, and the year of the Armageddon touches on the importance of some of these agencies, and particularly Mr. William Donovan, and he set the network for these spies that could do their dirty work later. The book goes on regarding the current connections of the CIA with the Pope and the Vatican. The CIA gives John Paul II a weekly briefing. The CIA is as close as the closest phone call. Mr. Casey has had a long, advanced, standing, intimate relationship with the papacy. He also is a Knight of Malta. Casey, more than any other CIA director since Mr. Donovan's time, has systematically developed the CIA's ties with the Vatican. The CIA retains its position as John Paul's main guide through the world of secret intelligence. They keep him continuously informed on Central America. They provide him with accurate evidence of the dangerous of the spread of liberation theology. That means the priests who feel sorry for the oppressed down there. They tip and squeal off information to the Vatican on the latest behavior of left-wing clerics in Nicaragua and El Salvador. John Paul II receives information from his cardinals, his bishops, his nuncios, but he has the CIA behind him all the way. Casey is a member of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. The Vatican, it goes on this article to say, it goes back to the Crusades, the warriors for the Vatican to protect the arm of the Catholic Church. And again, it brings up the question of who do these public officials such as Vernon Walder and Alexander Haig and the Buckleys and Claire Luce and Patrick Frawley and Jeremiah Denton, J. Peter Grace, who do they represent? They are the active running members, William Simon, Robert Wagner, the former mayor of New York. Who do these people represent? And this one chapter on the importance of Casey and the Vatican says, today, the order of the Knights of Malta with its nation status is important in the way it informs the Vatican, and it also was important, in a footnote it says here, of helping the Nazis leave the country after World War II, leave the various countries, and through the order of the Knights of Malta, they helped with the International Red Cross that 50,000 Nazi war criminals, including Klaus Barbie, the Butcher of Lyons, got out of Europe by way of the Vatican and by way of the priest, with the help of Reinhard Gehlen, who also, as I said, was knighted, Hitler's big spy master, and then joined the CIA. So one of the footnotes of this book, The Year of Armageddon, tells the order of the Knights of Malta, and of course, Licio Gelli was active with the Rat Line. 50,000 wanted war criminals left and went out of this country to plant their little seeds or acorns. And now you'll see more of it in the United States coming out in the type of activity that those Nazis up in Idaho have. The article says, a large portion of the Knights of Malta, there's 10,000 families, are part of Europe's oldest and richest Catholics. They, of course, ban the Jews, the Protestants, the Muslims, the separated or divorces. There's knighthood. Much of it is secret. And some of the members of the Knights of Malta, you don't know who they are. Now, it goes on that we have a CIA station chief in Rome who happens to be Mr. Wilson, who's also a Knight of Malta. And it's an ideal cover for William Casey, that the CIA can't go in and out of the Vatican every day, but Mr. Wilson can, and the Knights of Malta have to go to Rome once a year to see the Pope. And on their various travels back and forth, and you read many of them going in and out of Europe and in and out of the Vatican, they are a source of information for John Paul II about what's going on in South America. They also tip him off about what's going on in other countries, too. But this book says both the CIA and Vatican know that it is essential for the Pope never to be seen openly or allying himself with the political aims of the CIA or the Reagan administration. Working through an order such as the Knights of Malta, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, the country's leading Catholics, and the CIA appear to have a wider distance away from the Pope than its Rome station could achieve. The CIA in Rome can brief the Pope once a week. The CIA would appear unacceptable if the station chief was in and out of the Pope's office every day. Using the order, the Knights of Malta, Casey has opened a sophisticated conduit which allows the CIA on an indirect and informal basis to exchange ideas and opinions with the Pope. The CIA director, John McCone, used to fly to Rome and then struggle to persuade the John the 23rd to accept the CIA line. They use in this chapter the word to persuade John on the CIA line. John wasn't persuaded easily, and I did one or several broadcasts on what I believed was the murder of John the 23rd in June of 1963, leading up to the murder of John Kennedy in November 1963, and the CIA murder of Patrice Lumumba in 1961, the triumvirate of people that were beginning to get along and coexist with each other, who were a threat to the multinationals in the Congo, and I'll do some more of it later. So I don't have time to finish even reviewing the few pages of this book, The Year of the Armageddon, but I'm going to continue this with you next week and then go into Mr. Donovan of the OSS and some more important information about how his network was formed together and how it becomes the tremendous operation of Permandex, the role, again, in killing Kennedy, some new information that was just put together. So I'll have to take a break for one more week and get back to The Year of the Armageddon by Gordon Thomas and Max Borgen. And in the meantime, I'll be talking to some of you or corresponding on decisions to make. It's a shame to make them over the holidays. I may not rush into them, but there will be changes in the format of the broadcast as soon as I can make that transition easily. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you next week. Take care of yourself and have some good holidays, and we'll keep collecting that news.